Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Welcome back. It is Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, as it is each week with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. So I will introduce our guests, who we've talked about this subject before, but today going a little bit more specific when we ask the question, what is Ramadan and why should Christians care? This is from a International Mission Board piece that was I found it online. They put it out just a couple years ago. Just generally, what is it about this? What is Ramadan? We'll get into that, and that will unpack some Islamic theology. And then we'll talk about, interestingly enough, we'll land on, is there anything that we can learn as Christ followers from Ramadan, from what people are doing in Islam around the world? And it's happening right now, as a matter of fact, started in April, and we'll conclude, I think, May 23rd. So this is from this article. Imagine not taking in food or drink during daylight hours for 28 days straight. Envision what it would be like for that practice to be directly linked to your standing in society or your stature with God. This is the reality of Muslims during the month of Ramadan, a time when every follower of Islam is encouraged and in some cases required to spend the month exercising many forms of self-restraint, seeking to be aware of Allah and thinking about how they should best worship Him. So there's a lot here to unpack. And one of the things that we get to do every once in a while here on the show, especially on Theology Thursdays, is learn about other world religions, especially Islam, which is right up there with Christianity in terms of its penetration around the world. Obviously, it's been involved in a lot of political things. We've dealt with the violence of Islam, the theology of Islam itself, but today drilling down a little bit more into Ramadan. And so our good friend Dr. Ant Greenham is back in the house today, associate professor of missions and Islamic studies, spent time as a diplomat in Jordan himself, so originally from South Africa. And Dr. Greenham, great to see you. Welcome back. How are you?
Thank you so much. Love to be here.
It's great to have you. And when did you first start really studying Islam? Was it before you went to Jordan and served as a diplomat? Because you're in that environment. You kind of have to learn about it.
Well, it came across very strongly when I was in Israel, which was quite a time before I was in Jordan. And we had a Palestinian friend who lived in Gaza, and we spent some time with his family. He was quite a devout Muslim, so awareness of Islam started there.
And then, of course, you ended up, that was the central part of your studies, as you worked.
Yes, absolutely. So I focused on Islam, in particular missions to Muslims, and my dissertation was on why Palestinian Muslims become believers in Christ.
Yeah, which some interesting thing that go on during Ramadan that we'll talk about with respect to missions and especially evangelism. But help us understand just what Ramadan is anyway. And one of the first questions I had, which you addressed in your email to me, I'm like, I thought the last time I noticed Ramadan was in the fall, yet here we are in the spring. But what is Ramadan just generally, and then we'll get into the specifics?
Yes, absolutely. There are two things I want to touch on there. Firstly, Islam has five pillars. These are basics of Islamic behavior. Muslims are stronger on the doing aspect of Islam than the believing aspect of Islam. Mm. If you follow what Muslims do, folks aren't that concerned about what you may or may not actually believe inside. Well, the five pillars, very briefly: confession of faith, that'd be there's no God but God and Muhammad is the prophet of God. Then prayer five times a day, almsgiving, fasting during the month of Ramadan, which we're going to discuss, and then going on pilgrimage or Hajj once in your lifetime if you can possibly afford it. But those are the five pillars. So Ramadan is a pillar of Islam, really important, and essentially it's fasting during the daylight hours for a whole month. Actually, a little bit longer than the article you cited. It's typically 29 or 30 days. And so, well, what makes the difference? The difference is the moon. Mm. Because Muslims follow a lunar calendar, although we follow a solar calendar. And this is where things get interesting, because the way that the sun works, we have 365 and a quarter days to get around the sun in a year. But a lunar month is either 29 or 30 days, depending on when the new moon comes around and you sight it. If you count all the lunar months in a year, you're going to be around 354. Mm. You're going to be 11 days short of our 365-day calendar year. And so because they don't make any correction for the difference between the lunar and the solar calendar, Muslim years, being that a little bit shorter over time, they tend to actually have a shorter period. So that means if you're only counting 354 days, the same season the next year is going to start about 11 days earlier.
Yeah, so do they only do it once a solar year?
Yes, so there'd be 12 months in the year, but they're lunar months.
Right.
So totaling a 354.
Which is why when we look at it, I ask the question, why does it move?
Yes.
For them, it's perfectly consistent. For us, it's off.
But it actually, over a period of 30 years, they will go right around the calendar.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a leap year. When you run into that and have a February 29th.
So a very old man, for example, could boast that he's been around the calendar three times.
Right, exactly. That makes perfect sense now that you mention it. Yes, I would not normally think like that. So when did Ramadan come into existence for Islam?
This is a great question. And a lot will hinge on how Islam started. And there's been a fair amount of controversy on this. Traditionally, scholars said that we could be pretty sure about the Islamic story of how it started. There was paganism in the Arabian Peninsula, and Muhammad brought monotheism into the situation. The real situation seems to be a lot more complex than that. And some Muslims would probably be upset with me even suggesting this, but the evidence does suggest that there was a strong Christian/Jewish community in the Arabian Peninsula. And possibly what we're talking about is that Islam originated further to the north of the Arabian Peninsula than it's said to be, which of course is the area of Mecca
right.
And later Medina.
And when you mention making the pilgrimage, the Hajj, that's going to Mecca.
Absolutely.
Got it. Okay.
Absolutely. So very likely Islam emerges from a Jewish-Christian situation, and the Christian situation was probably involving a fair amount of heterodox theology, people who didn't really put Jesus Christ in the place where the Bible places him, having some doubt about who he really is.
Yeah, because I've heard in the past, and we're coming up on a break, I've heard in the past that Muhammad's mother might have been heavily influenced by that kind of Christian, Judeo-Christian background, and then you get this kind of homogeny of everything that flows into Islam. We're talking about Ramadan today because we're in the month of Ramadan for Muslims around the world. We're talking to Dr. Ann Greenham today on Theology Thursday. This is Steve Noble at The Steve Noble Show. We'll be right back after this. Back. It's Steve Noble, The Steve Noble Show. TheSteveNobleShow.com is the website. As always, you can find it on any podcast platform out there, as well as right here on Facebook, too. We're doing Facebook Live just about all the time for the radio show. We've been doing that since. Actually, our very first Facebook Live guest here in this studio was several years ago. It's none other than Ann Graham Lotz. And ever since that day, we've been trying to do Facebook Live all along the way. So we have, during the radio show, the bulk of the content, the main focus of the show occurs in between the commercial breaks, so during the actual content of the show. But on Facebook Live, we tend to take advantage of that extra 13, 14, 15 minutes that we have between 4 and 5 p.m. Eastern when commercials are running to go a little bit deeper into the subject or to take a little bit of a side trip, usually coming out of that subject. So like that's what we were just doing on the commercial break. So if you want to know what Dr. Ann Greenham and I were just talking about for 5 minutes, well, you're going to have to go to Facebook to do that. But the great thing about Facebook Live is as soon as we're done at the end of the show, we always pray together at the end of the show, which doesn't happen on the radio. That only happens on Facebook Live. Then it stays there. So Facebook Live essentially becomes a video podcast. So if you want kind of that more in-depth or some of that sidebar conversation, Facebook Live is the way to do it. The Steve Noble Show is all you need to do on Facebook, nice and easy. But Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern. Dr. Greenham is the Associate Professor of Missions and Islamic Studies. You'll recognize quickly. He doesn't exactly have an American accent or even a Southern accent. He's got a South African accent, but also spent time in Israel as well as Jordan. And then this is really kind of part of the epicenter of his ministry in dealing with missions and evangelism to the Muslim population. So today, as we're in the middle of or coming up towards the end of Ramadan, what a great opportunity. And thank you so much for suggesting this. It's just fascinating. But we were talking about kind of the history of Ramadan itself. You started off with the five pillars: prayer, Ramadan, which is the fasting portion, confession. There's only one God, and we talk about Allah in that. Almsgiving to the poor, and then the pilgrimage to Hajj. But then I asked that question about kind of when Ramadan started and what was kind of the impetus. I guess the year that it started isn't quite as important as why do it.
Yes, yes. And I was pointing out that Islam almost certainly started in a context of Christians and Jews. And, of course, Jews are very focused on fasting, particularly Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement, which we have in Leviticus 16 and other places. And so what happens is, if you're looking at Islam, it seems that in many ways Islam is trying to do one better than Judaism. We are better than the followers of Moses. Here is another prophet like Moses. The claim, for example, that a prophet will come after Moses, if we read in Deuteronomy, Muslims claim that is Muhammad, which of course is simply untenable if you are looking at the New Testament.
So we'll see your fasting, and we'll raise you one with Ramadan.
But here is a Jewish context where Jews are fasting, and it would seem that is what became the impetus for Ramadan. And what changed is not just one day a year, but a whole month, but only for part of the month, because they fast during the daylight hours. So a whole lunar month, from before daylight until after sunset, throughout the month.
Yeah, fast. Somewhere between 29 and 30 days, is that
correct,
right?
Depending on the
which on lunar month you're in. Right,
yeah.
Got
yes,
it.
Yes.
And so what are the kind of the goals or the aspects of what happens during Ramadan? And then like in this article from the International Mission Board, they kind of made it seem like, well, yeah, there's some pressure there, but not a whole lot of pressure. But it seems, based on something you said off the air, that there actually is quite a bit of cultural pressure within Islam to take part in Ramadan.
Oh, believe me, there is great pressure.
Yeah.
And essentially it's abstinence. Abstinence from anything to drink, anything to eat, anything that you would enjoy, like sexual relations with your wife. Certainly if you are a smoker, smoking would be a no-no during the daylight hours of Ramadan. All of that, you abstain. But it's just during the daylight hours. During the evening, this is the time for making up, feasting, and
revelry. Would you go so far as to say revelry? It's like, hey, we say that in our context. I'm starving.
Yeah.
Then I didn't eat all day. Then you get home and you go totally 100% gluttony.
If we have time, I'd like to give you a couple of my experiences from Ramadan in Jordan.
Yeah. So feel free. I'd love to hear that.
So here you are in the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan, and it's a Muslim-majority country. Well over 95% of the people there are Muslim, and they will all fast. You will be in serious trouble if you try to eat in public during Ramadan. So here's what happened once. My son was a little bit behind, as teenagers often are. He had a sports event in the afternoon. He didn't have time to eat lunch, but he took lunch to eat with him in the car. That would be no problem except for the fact that it was Ramadan. But how does he eat in the car? Because that would be obviously visible to anybody else. But to make himself invisible, he put the lunch on the floorboard, bent over double, and ate like that. So anybody watching us would think that I was alone in the car.
Yes.
No, we weren't. Our son was bent over double, getting his lunch on our way to the sporting event that he had in the afternoon.
Yeah, funny.
So just to illustrate the importance of not being seen eating.
Yes.
And
you weren't Muslims, obviously, but that was what it was.
Whoever you
offensive.
Are, you do not eat in public in Ramadan. And then, of course, I'm talking about smoking. If you have a nicotine addiction, it's going to be pretty tough on you by the end of the day.
Yeah.
We were in the embassy, and all embassies had guards assigned to us, and I remember very distinctly emerging from the embassy one evening. It was in the winter, so Ramadan daylight hours were a lot shorter than they would be in the summer. Here's a guard. He's got the cigarette in his mouth. He's got the lighter waiting.
Wow.
And as soon as you hear the words, Allahu Akbar, then he lights the cigarette.
Yeah, lights it up.
So,
Yeah, pretty serious when they're suffering during the day. So let's talk about what they're trying to accomplish. What's a Muslim trying to accomplish during Ramadan?
So the theory behind it is a very good one. Essentially, you abstain, you exercise some self-discipline. It's a great time to remember that there are a lot of folks who are disadvantaged, who are much worse off than you are. Ideally, the amount of money you'd save on the food that you would have eaten in Ramadan can be donated to the poor. So it's an encouragement to good works. Also, you have a lot more social activity during the evening hours. People will gather in the mosques for social times and in homes. There's a meal, they call it iftar, literally means breakfast. But when the fast is broken at the end of the day, they will have this meal. And so it's a time for the community to get together and build community. Also a time of fundraising. Mm. And this is perhaps a time I can talk about the effect of the COVID-19.
Yeah, I was going to say, because there's a lot of aspects of it that I'm sitting there thinking, because we're in the COVID-19 context, of it kind of in an amusing way, because they're going all denial of all these different things, and you can't do this, and you can't go out to eat. And you go, okay, that sounds a little bit like the stay-at-home order. But yeah, and now they're especially, I would imagine it's not as much of a big deal in a Muslim-based country, because they're not going to set Islam aside in order for medical science. But in America,
believe it or not, they have.
Oh, they have.
Saudi Arabia's mosques are closed.
Wow,
this is amazing.
That's fascinating, because that doesn't happen.
It does not happen.
All right, we're talking to Dr. Ann Greenham today on Theology Thursday. This is Steve Noble. We're up against a break, but we're talking about Ramadan, just learning about Ramadan itself, and then what can we learn about it? Why should we care about it? Hopefully, at this point, you're already picking up on some things. Going, you know what? I could probably use a little of that in my own life as a Christian, of course. But we'll go there next with Dr. Ann Greenham. We'll be right back.
So if you're happy in your stuff, and if 10% enough, stay.
Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday with our friends at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Of course, neither myself nor my guest today, Dr. Ann Greenham, for us as Christians, we're not taking part in Ramadan, obviously. But there are some things about Ramadan that I think we can draw out and apply to our own lives as Christ followers because, we'll talk to that. There's a lot there going on that I think we can definitely kind of take. What are they trying to do? What are they trying to accomplish? And then ask ourselves the same question. What kind of dedication do we have to prayer, to fasting, to helping those less fortunate than ourselves? But today, trying to understand Ramadan, because it's going on right now around the world in Islam. It is a big, big deal. We were talking with Dr. Greenham earlier and saying now there's so much pressure to be a part of Islam for a Muslim. It's not like I think for us, I would liken it to, it's not like Lent. Most of us are aware of Lent. Catholic Church follows Lent much more seriously than the Protestant Church. We kind of know it's there. If you don't observe Lent, if you don't get the ash, if you don't give something up for Lent, nobody's really paying attention. It's not that big a deal. And when some people, we look at them and go, oh, okay, fine, they're probably Catholic, whatever. But in Islam, Ramadan is a huge deal.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you follow the fast with great severity.
Yeah.
I was saying a little earlier, the elements of the community, which is strong, especially in the evenings when they break the fast, get together. And this is a time actually of fundraising. I'm on a mailing list of the Council of American Islamic Relations.
CARE.
A pretty strident organization.
Quite.
They write to me as if I'm a Muslim, and that's okay. I like to be there so I can be kept abreast of what's going on.
Yes.
But one thing they are pushing through the whole month of Ramadan is, give me money, fundraising. Now, one of the problems is that for many Muslims, they will give money when they're with others in community in the mosque, and they'll be encouraged to give more when they see other people putting money into the coffers. Well, I should probably do this as well. But if you're not there, which is the case of COVID-19, then the incentive to be very free with your wallet is going to be diminished. And so funds have dropped drastically. Mm. In fact, in parts of Europe, there's even been a couple of cases where mosques have been appealing to the national governments to help them stay afloat.
How about that?
Because essentially, Ramadan is the month of the year they're going to make their money.
Make or break your budget.
A bit like
Ramadan.
Black Friday.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think that's a perfect example. Yes, that's a perfect analogy.
So now the people aren't there. They aren't giving. Now, of course, you can talk to people are giving online, but a lot of people, especially in more traditional society, they aren't online. They traditionally give when they're with their community.
Yeah.
Not with their community
just
anymore.
Yep.
So funds have dropped. So it's been a big blow for them in terms of community and also fundraising.
Now, what's been the response, especially in more Muslim-driven communities and countries like Jordan and Saudi Arabia? What's been the response to them literally shutting down the main monument there in Mecca and mosques and all these places?
There's been resistance, but you've got to remember that these are authoritarian societies.
Yeah.
And so essentially when the authorities tell you what to do, you better do it or else you're in trouble. As a quick aside, there's actually been far more pushback from the Orthodox Jewish community with all the restrictions.
Yeah.
I get JTA, which is Jewish Telegraph Agency, news every day, and it's interesting to read time and again. There's a synagogue doing something with social distancing in theory, but in practice, that's cast to the winds, and in very close quarters.
Yeah, well, that context of that authoritarianism for a lot of people in America, myself included, has been a concern on the COVID-19 developments here as the government, you know, I think people generally were willing to go along and let's care about each other and look out for each other and see what this thing is. But after a while, there's a line in the sand and people, they're trying to balance personal safety with liberty.
Absolutely.
But that conversation doesn't happen in a Muslim context.
No. And one thing that surprised me is the state of Georgia was fairly quick to open.
Mm-hmm.
And the mosques in Georgia decided that it was too early to open. So they actually told their people, stay away, even in the month of Ramadan.
Yeah. Wow.
They were more concerned about the health aspect.
Yeah. So they're doing the fasting every day. In the evening, when the sun goes down, they do iftar, which is very communal, which I think we could all take a lesson from that. But they're trying to draw – is their ultimate goal of Ramadan just trying to get closer to God?
Absolutely.
That's the number one thing.
A question that's often asked is, what can I do to get rid of my sin?
Yeah.
And fasting is the best way of dealing with it. And so if you fast, then all the sins you've committed will be hopefully – wiped away.
Yeah, because I want people to understand that, we'll call it the salvific theology.
Oh my goodness,
of Islam,
that's really important. Yeah,
which is this is the danger of Islam, and this is why for those that choose to martyr themselves, because that's really the only guaranteed road to paradise.
Correct.
Is to martyr yourself.
Correct.
Other than that, what's the deal?
You don't know what God's going to do because you don't know God. God is unknowable, and so although there are these indications, you can't tell God what he's going to do on the Day of Judgment. In spite of all your efforts to keep the five pillars of Islam, you may go the wrong way. So you do your best. Most people just do their best and leave it at that.
Yeah.
But some, as you said, suggested, go so far as to try to die in jihad.
Well, I met some young Muslim guys when I was doing a couple of trips. A mission trip to northern Iraq, and then talking to them and just asking, so just kind of like evangelism explosion, if you died today, where do you think you'd go? And a couple of these young guys were like, oh, I'd definitely go to hell. Mm. Oh, really? Why? Oh, I've been a terrible Muslim.
Yeah.
Well, what do you mean by that? Oh, well, I don't fast. I'm never going to Mecca. I'm just so ultimately, why bother? But, you know, it's kind of more Western there. You could get away with that.
What if God's in a good mood? In spite of all that, it might be okay.
Yeah, you might be all right. Who knows?
Yes.
Maybe you'll die on a good day.
I say that a bit flippantly, but if God's unknowable, he's unknowable.
Yeah, period.
Yes.
So do you find – and I'm a little off track here, but we'll come back to it. Do you find that, from your own personal experience, that most Muslims worldwide are kind of hopeless or give up on it, or is there so much societal pressure they just continue to kind of play the game, if I can use that phrase?
Most Muslims will just do what they've always done because that's the way they've been brought up. And you've got to understand how important community is for a Muslim. And I do want to talk a little bit about our approach as Christians towards Muslims. And this is something we really need to have front and center, the importance of community.
Yeah.
And so fasting is a communal thing. That's why I was indicating earlier that to eat in public during Ramadan would be a big no-no. There's huge communal pressure not to do that. So you will do these things because the community around you is doing that. But the idea, well, if I didn't, would it actually make any difference? Well, who knows? Hence, inshallah, it's in the will of God ultimately.
And that's what that's what they say, right?
Inshallah, yes, absolutely.
That's just the will of God.
Yes,
which is kind of you throwing your hands up.
Yes, yes, and remarkable. there's an element. Let me talk about something that Christians can learn about. Inshallah, typically it tends to be a cop out, but at the same time, we need to step back and realize actually what happens is because of God's will. How many of us were expecting to do all sorts of things in the months of March, April, and May this year?
Yeah.
How many of us said God willing when we said that?
Yeah.
Clearly, God was not willing, with all respect.
That's right.
And I think it'll wake up call that actually, yes. God willing for us Christians, it needs to be said more often, and it's biblical.
Oh, James absolutely. Chapter 4. Well, yeah. I don't know when I experienced that myself. Several years ago, I think I might have been teaching through the book of James.
Yes.
And so, hey, we'll go to this place and that place, and we'll make a few bucks. James goes, no. God willing.
Yes.
Because you're not guaranteed tomorrow. Nobody knows how many days they're going to live. You don't know any of that stuff. So there should be that ascendancy, intellectual, emotional, theological, and otherwise, to the will of God. And I just don't think we, especially as Western Christians, just don't think like that very often. We just kind of always assume tomorrow.
This is what Muslims will say. This is what they mean by inshallah. They're giving great awe and respect to God and acknowledging that really everything depends on Him. We can learn from that.
Yes.
Unfortunately, in practice, it more often than not tends to be a cop-out.
Yeah. Whatever.
If you don't want to do something, you'll say God willing. In other words, unless God specifically intervenes, it's not going to happen. They don't say that.
But that's
the implication.
Yeah. There's what you say and there's what it's meant.
By the way, if you're being harassed by somebody in a market in the Middle East, one of the great ways to avoid buying something you don't want to buy is you say, Bukra, inshallah, mumkin, which means tomorrow, God willing, maybe. Now it's in the hands of God.
Right. You're looking at
who are they to argue with God?
Yes.
They just have to say, inshallah.
Yeah.
I mean, the pressure's off. You can walk on.
That's hilarious. When that comes from somebody that's obviously not a Muslim, do they just kind of smile at you, or what? How do they react to that?
Well, you brought God's name into it, so they have to respond in kind.
Yeah.
Like the greeting is salamu alaikum. And they have to say, wa alaikum as-salam, peace be upon you.
Yeah.
And there's a response. I climbed the traditional site of Mount Sinai in Egypt back in the 1990s, and the taxi driver didn't want us to do this. I didn't tell him we were going to. So we were gone 5 hours doing this.
Wow.
He was hopping mad when we came back. The first thing I said to him was, salamu alaikum. He could only say, wa alaykum as-salam.
You
had to say that.
Wow, yeah. You knew what you were talking about. Yeah, and that probably frustrated me even more. We're talking to Dr. Ann Greenham about Ramadan when we come back in the final segment. What can we learn and apply from what the Muslims are doing with Ramadan? We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, as it is every week with our friends out here at Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. By the way, go ahead and say thank you, Steve. Thank you. I really appreciate that, Steve. Thank you so much. What are you thanking me for? That we're not talking about COVID-19. It's touched on it a little bit because something has happened that's really never happened, apparently, in the history of Islam, or even in Mecca, shut down because of the COVID-19 situation in mosques around the world. Very, very highly unusual, so a very strange time based on that. But we're not doing the show on COVID-19. But if you missed the talk of COVID-19, just come back in 24 hours, because I can assure you there'll be some talk about that tomorrow. Some political things going on, some fascinating things going on in this country and around the world. So there's so much to continue to talk about, and we will. But none of that's out of fear. And none of that's out of concern ultimately for the future. We don't grieve over any of this stuff as those who have no hopes. So you got to remember that if you're losing sleep over this, if there's a lot of consternation, if there's a whole lot of anger, if there's angst, if there's fear and worry and concern, I would encourage you to turn into the Lord here. And especially as we talk about Ramadan, because that's the whole purpose of that for a Muslim, is to get closer to God in the midst of this. That's definitely one part of our lives that we should not be kind of sheltering. We need to be digging in even deeper, and it should be a good test of your faith. Where are you putting your faith? Where is your hope? Where are you looking for? Where are you looking to in times of trouble? So if you're really bent on all this, and I have to push away from it myself, that should cause us to go back to our rock, go back to your foundation, go back to Christ, because that's part of the great witness that we have. In the midst of this trouble, which is serious, and we care about everyone, whether it's COVID-related or unemployment-related or whatever, we still got to have to live as people whose houses are built on the rock. So there should be a kind of a strange aloofness to us. Whereas we're broken about the here and now, we long for the there and then, and we operate in between those two worlds. So let's just remember that as we return to that tomorrow. But today, talking to Dr. Ann Greenham, and it seems, Dr. Greenham, there's a whole lot that we could actually learn here as Christians, as followers of Christ from Ramadan.
Yeah. Can I take a question a little differently and
sure.
talk about how Christians have responded to Ramadan? And there's been a move over many years now to pray intensely for the Muslim world for the entire period of Ramadan, 29, 30 days. Prayer booklets are put out. There'd be a specific prayer focus for Muslims in different parts of the world and for Christian ministry to Muslims in those parts of the world, often for believers from a Muslim background. And so this has been going on for a long time, and certainly it's going on right now. One of the interesting aspects of this is the 27th day of Ramadan is called the Night of Power, Laylat al-Qadr, they call it in Arabic. And often this is seen by Muslims as a very special night when the heavens are open, and prayers offered on that day will be far more efficacious than prayers offered any other time. And so Christians are often encouraged to pray especially for Muslims on that day.
Yeah.
Of course, depending on the moon, you can't be exactly sure when Laylat al-Qadr is. And different groups will often stress different days. Often the last 10 days altogether of Ramadan will be seen as more special. I would just encourage prayer for Muslims whenever you think of it. Don't just limit it to Ramadan, but pray for Muslims, seek for opportunities to get to know, befriend Muslims, to minister to them. But this has been a strong focus of Christians.
Yeah, such a powerful
to
point.
Pray through the entire month of Ramadan.
Which started April, the evening, it was Thursday evening, April 23rd is when it started.
Yes.
It concludes on Sunday, the 24th of May, which is coming up. And that's such an interesting point in this international
mission. That's assuming you see the moon.
Right, assuming you see the moon. So yes. If you don't see the moon.
It could be delayed one day.
Wow, okay, yeah. All right, so that's fascinating. So.
Yes.
In this International Mission Board, I wanted to bring this up because everything I've been learning about Muslims coming to Christ, particularly in the Middle East in the last 10, 15, 20 years, from this piece, it says the month of Ramadan is a time when Muslims are very aware of dreams and visions. And they went on to say in this particular piece, dreams and visions in which Jesus appears. In fact, you will meet few Muslim background believers who have come to Christ without an experience of that nature, which is a bit of a generalized statement.
It is.
But for us in the Western church, in the Western culture, that whole notion of being visited by Jesus in dreams and visions is very foreign.
Yes.
And I think oftentimes we would write it off. But it would appear, because I didn't know about that 27th night, that special night of Ramadan, that, hey, that's actually does happen.
Yeah. And in my research on the Palestinian Muslims who came to faith in Christ, the element of the miraculous, supernatural was really important. Mm-hmm. Often it involved a dream, but not always. I wouldn't want to be quite as blanket in the way that you read out there. It is often that way, but not only. And witness from a believer is also very important. I wouldn't want to take the route that some do, is pray the Muslims will have dreams, and kind of that's your duty in terms of witnessing to Muslims.
Right.
No. Real flesh and blood, living life and sharing Christ with Muslims is very, very important.
And the thing that I remember there, and I was shocked by this when I spent time in northern Iraq, is that you mentioned it several times earlier, the community, how important it is. And we would just do prayer walking through the streets, and we would end up in people's homes for hours.
Yes.
Because that communal aspect in honor, and their shame honor culture, we're not, was so powerful.
Yeah, people are so hospitable.
And in Ramadan, is that a good time to just have a conversation with a Muslim and just maybe ask him about it?
Oh, absolutely. Now, you've only got a few days left, so you better be quick.
Right, you better be quick.
But what's coming up right after Ramadan is Eid al-Fitr. That's the festival of great celebration, typically your last 4 days straight in the Muslim world. When I was in Jordan, I had to decide how many public holidays to actually set aside for the Eid. But this is a time of visiting from between families, and we when we moved to where we are now, there was a Muslim family living right next door to us, and we came right at that time. We made a point of buying some goodies for the kids and going over and giving that to them. They were very happy with that. And the lady insisted on giving us some food from all the copious amounts she was cooking to take back home with us.
Yeah.
So, yes, they would love some kind of
sounds
gesture.
A little bit like sowing and reaping in that deal. Blessed.
They would love that kind of gesture.
So what would you say are kind of the top things that we could learn and try to incorporate as Christians from what Muslims are doing with Ramadan?
In a way, my comment here is negative because the thing with Ramadan is just so legalistic. And be careful of being legalistic as a Christian. Don't think that if you do this, that, and the other, that God's going to be more pleased with you than if you don't. So this is a really, really important prayer request. So I better fast and pray. So, God, can you see how much I'm suffering now? You've got to answer this prayer now. Wait a bit. That's pagan. That's not Christian.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, God answers because he's gracious. Not because we deserve it.
Amen.
You don't have to earn a whole bunch of brownie points before God's going to listen to you. He listens to you because of what his son did on the cross.
That's right. Yeah.
Never forget that.
Yeah. So important. Yeah, I've told somebody recently that God listens to your prayers because, to be consistent with himself, he has to.
Absolutely.
Because of what was accomplished through Christ. It's that powerful.
You know, I keep muttering to myself, God owes you nothing.
Yeah.
But he gives me so much.
Isn't that amazing?
It's all out of grace.
Yeah. So beautiful.
And so this is the big thing. I want to emphasize, never, never drift away from grace.
And avoid legalism. Don't drift away from grace. That's great. But the fact that, what about just fasting in general?
Yes, but fasting is a great discipline. May I understand the New Testament, and some may disagree with me. I don't believe it condemns or commands fasting. And so I think if you find fasting helpful, by all means do that. If you find it unhelpful, don't do it. And don't put yourself on a guilt trip over it either.
Yeah.
I think that's the freedom we have in Christ.
There's grace again.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's so beautiful. And then just what about prayer life in general? Because, I mean, I understand the theology and how broken and ineffective it is that a Muslim's called to pray five times a day. But I do appreciate the discipline of those that do.
Absolutely. Because the flip side of what we say, which is you can pray any time. You know, some people might be praying, how much longer is this show going on?
Exactly.
we can pray
anytime.
I think
mostly what they're praying is, Lord, give Steve and Ant another hour on the air. That's what they're praying.
Yeah, that'd be a nice prayer to pray. But we can pray any time. But the flip side of that, you can fool yourself into thinking, well, I pray all the time, and actually not to carve out time that you are actually deliberately setting out to read and to pray. And so it's a big rigmarole what Muslims have to go through, the washing and facing the right direction and stopping what they're doing. But at the same time, the discipline is admirable.
Oh, very much so.
And we could certainly learn from that. Again, just don't slip into legalism
right. As
you do that.
You play a bunch of if-then games with God, and that's going to – if I do this, if I do that, if I do the other thing, then – God will give me this, and he'll do that, and he'll solve this, and he'll heal me of that. You have to be really careful with that.
Yeah. Rather, he's given me so much. Now, Lord, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
And, hey, all these exciting things. Lord, please bless him. I think you're in it, but keep directing me. I need it.
Amen. That's right. It's a real general question because we only got about a minute and a half left. We haven't really dealt with recently. There hasn't been a whole big issue of terrorism worldwide. We haven't seen that, especially in the American context. It's still out there, obviously. ISIS, quote unquote, defeated. There's been the violence of Islam, of fundamentalist Islam, is not on the front page now. So do you think that we from a evangelistic missional perspective, is it kind of out of sight, out of mind? Do you think that we have less focus on Islam now because things aren't blowing up, to be really frank?
I'm afraid the answer is probably yes. And really, the focus we should have is on 1.7, 1.8 billion people who need Jesus.
Who need Jesus.
And he loves them just as much as he loved me as an unbeliever. And we need to keep telling ourselves that, not to get distracted by the splashy atrocity nature of things. Here are people, and with a high sense of morals, good family people, folks who will often risk their lives for you, and they need to know the Savior of the world who died for them.
So well said. Dr. Ant Greenham, Associate Professor of Missions and Islamic Studies, thank you so much for helping us today.
You are welcome.
As always, it's great to see you. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show, Theology Thursday, like we try to do every single week. with our friends at Southeastern. I'll be back tomorrow. Check it out at thestevenobleshow.com. Grab the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon.